Hi, this is Niles McClower for the new show, Why Life Is, right here on Friday nights at 7 p.m. Pacific Time. Now on BBS Radio, Why Life Is answers a vast number of questions and explores the demystifying of metaphysics and spirituality. Just a fraction of what we will cover are such subjects as detailed explanations of the afterlife, what the meaning of life is, and what intelligent life is like in other worlds. This is a show many of you have been waiting for to hear and participate in as well. Why Life Is has been on the air broadcasting for nearly 3 years and is now available on BBS Radio in prime time on Friday nights at 7 p.m.
Welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McClower. And it's a happy new year. Yes, it is that time of year again, the last one of them, the last day of the year. And I thought that tonight would be the appropriate show for spiritually helping the world for the next year, as our topic in title. Also, I thought it was appropriate because there's a lot of, well, straggling ideas and thoughts from quite a few shows that there either wasn't enough time or it didn't quite fit in or whatever. So I thought maybe I'll throw it all together and try to put it in tonight's show. And hopefully this will be both educational and maybe give some people a chance to actually think about what their plans might be for dealing with becoming a more spiritual person during the next coming year. So that's, without much ado, we'll start with that idea. And, of course, this is a show about metaphysics and spirituality and science, physics. We deal with a lot of different subjects. Sometimes we'll say, more controversial ones. I have, in the last year or two, been talking about some political factors. I'll probably throw a few of those in tonight as well. And some other things that may or may not be exactly what you want to do with the rest of, well, with the next year. But nonetheless, it is something to think about. And, of course, that's what the show is about, is thinking and getting everybody to do more of it so that we all can grow and become more conscious individuals. To begin with, what do I mean by spiritually helping the world? Well, in order for there to be positive change, it requires that individuals, all of us as individuals, make choices that will move in a direction that is towards light or towards the thinking of virtue and God's thought. And if we're going to become spiritual, we need to adopt this thinking as a greater part of our own in the things that we do. So hopefully we'll see how we can maybe make those changes. And if you are listening over the phone, that's great. If you're listening over the internet, same here, same there. I do want to remind you that the first option, which I can't remember exactly what the name of that one is, but the first option to get connected online is not the best one. The ones lower than that usually are more stable. So you may lose a signal if you take the very first option, because that one is the one that doesn't seem to usually stay for the whole show. And I don't know exactly all the technical reasons for that, but nonetheless. If you're on the phone and you lose the phone signal, you can always try, of course, calling back. If it just goes dead, you might wait a few seconds and see if we come back on. For those of you who would rather be on the phone and you're presently listening on here, you can try 712-432-0075. And you could be one of the people listening over the phone if that's your preference. And the advantage there is you can get away from the computer that you right now may be looking at. Okay. So let's talk about where we're headed. What are the things that are maybe concerning the way the world is moving? And at the present time, there's a conflict. The conflict you can best be described. as the following, and that is that the active or activity issues of God's mind and the creations that are part of the universe have, at the present time in the physical world, become exaggerated towards rigidity, materiality, and a lack of a spiritual focus. So we're, and the reason for this has to do with the third type of energy, which is dominating a lot of activities of human beings right now and has been dominant for quite some time. And it's reaching this crescendo, the very biggest point of its development. And in so doing, it has become a focal point for too many people and has become sometimes corrupted within the too many people by their desires for self, we'll say, attainment of material things at the cost of spiritual parts of their life. And this balance is going to start correcting itself about sometime next year. The year following this one, we can be looking towards that process culminating. Now, a lot of people say, oh, that's 2012 and all the bad things are going to happen. Well, some bad things probably will happen. The reason for that is that when selfish people have the desire and need for power and control, which is part of this third ray effect when it's excessive and obsessive, then bad things tend to occur, usually to humanity, but sometimes it could be global events that go beyond just humanity. It's better if it's concentrated only on humanity, and that is the way in the plan, we'll say, of our souls and God is the preferred method, because you don't want to destroy all life on Earth. You may hurt humans, but it would be better to keep the world as intact as possible. So we're making our own beds, as we say, and we may be lying in them in another year. And some of this negative type of darker energy of materiality, which is coming from not just a desire for material things, but also the desire to control and have power over others. So it's a kind of combined effect coming from what is known as a crystallization, some people call it like cement, of the third ray. It's becoming so hard and so unchangeable and inflexible. This is producing these kinds of effects. Now, you don't have to know that much about what I just said to understand the general idea, because some of you may be new listeners and you haven't really, maybe you're not familiar with this part of metaphysical expression and mysticism and other things. But nonetheless, that's the concept here, is that the world is moving towards both a darker place, a less changeable place, and the people who desire to have control and power over others, usually for material gain, but not always, are both in power worldwide, and maybe more so even in the United States, but also have a peculiarity in their thought process, because rather than being true spiritual thinkers, they may pretend to be, for the most part, what they think about is, we'll say, abusing that concept of spirituality to attain some level of power and control. And this is an unfortunate thing. So what do we do, the rest of us who hopefully aren't in that vein? I'm assuming that most of our listeners tonight are not in that category. And because unless, unfortunately, they're listening to gain some strategy, you know, oh, I'll listen to this guy so maybe I can get even more power over it. Well, maybe they can try that. It probably won't work. So what can we do about this situation? I mean, do we go out in the streets and start screaming and yelling or something? Or do we Do we write blogs, or should we let everybody know about this effect? Maybe they'll become more aware of it in some way. What is the best thing, the best way to deal with this particular kind of crisis? And the answer is a little bit strange, because it has two parallel tracks that seem contradictory, except by the end of tonight's show, I don't think they'll be that contradictory, but they start off seeming that way. The first track is, on an individual basis, we need to be creating, each of us, more freedom for others and more of the ability for others to find and be co-creative with God or their creator, that we hopefully will then involve ourselves in some way. But the first part is what I just said. So we need to be helping others to do this by doing it ourselves, of course, but everything we do should in some way enable others to be more co-creative and expressive of God in themselves. We should not do something that may help ourselves to be quote-unquote creative or co-creative of God, but then lessens or destroys others' abilities to do so. That's what the other side is doing sometimes. So we have to be careful that we don't mistake our both desires and our behaviors and make sure they're going in the right direction. So that's like number one. And that follows the first part of our Creator's mind, and it's a very good thing. And it does come a little bit before the second thing, which I'm going to bring up now, which is the second track. Okay, we had two tracks, and I said they seem like they're going to be not compatible, but they will. But the second track is that we need to be compassionate and help others to be further more compassionate. We need to be empathic. We need to make sure that those who have great both personal and maybe even group karmic misfortune are in some way helped by the things that we do. And that provides those people with opportunity to change, but doesn't give them just their personal needs, but gives them the opportunity to share and give more to others themselves. And so we're helping others to become more giving while we give to them and sometimes even save them in some respects, because they might be in a very bad way from either karmic issues that they created for themselves. Now, I'm not saying that this isn't like an undeserving issue in terms of karma, but it still seems uncompassionate. And also, we need to be concerned about these fellow people who need whatever assistance it can be that makes them more giving, at the same time that we may be helping them somewhat personally and hopefully at other times much more as souls. So this is the complicated situation. And then you say, well, wait a second, hold on. It sounds like the second thing, which is actually has to do with the second part of God's mind, how is that going to fit in with the first part? If we're being individuals and we're helping ourselves to be creative and we're helping others to be creative, wouldn't we be using some of our resources up to help others who have been less creative and have maybe got themselves into a big pickle and have a lot of problems, and they may not deserve our charity, so to speak. They may not deserve even our help. And here is the answer. This is a fascinating answer. The answer is that as long as we're helping them to become more loving, we can help them to deal with even some of their karma. We can even take on some of their karma, provided that they're becoming more loving while they are not still decreasing their creativity but increasing. So the caveat here is that these two have to go together. They can never be separately done. You can't help people to be more creative and then help them to be more selfish. And you can't help people to be more loving without helping them at the same time to be more creative. There's a very interesting issue here. If we decrease or damage their ability to be creative by making like a welfare state or something like that, and take their choices away because we know better, or we think we know better, for them, then the results could be disastrous. Even though they may become more giving, they become more giving in a very passive way in which there's no creation involved. And so they're still not part of the thought, the total thought, which is spiritual thought of God. Because God is both sides of these things. God is incredibly compassionate. God has grace, which means that no matter how bad you may be, or the worst things that you may be, there is grace, and I'll tell you why there's grace. Everybody talks about original sin, but see, there's really something that balances that whole concept out, which hasn't been taught very much. There's original, grand, we'll even say, sacrifice and creation from our soul. We are here because our soul is seeking to grow more of its creator in a lower dimension than where it can exist. So it creates us, it gives up a huge amount of its own existence for our purposes, so that we're free still to co-create or not, to be destructive or not to our creator and to others, while we're incarnate in the physical and later astral and lower mental worlds. So we are on a great journey. And that journey either ends with most of our existence while we're on the journey having little or no meaning, or it has tremendous meaning and tremendous service to others, which is what I'm suggesting we're talking about in tonight's show, because we're following our soul's mission, which we have to discover for ourselves in a creative fashion. It can't be told to us, and even if it were, we wouldn't listen. And we have to discover it through a journey in which we are creative, while we also are very giving and compassionate. And sometimes we allow to be given to when we tremendously screw up. But that's the grace. The grace is that we're given to even when we screw up. And it's not as irrational as it sounds, because we made the choice to make an even greater sacrifice than whatever it is that we've done that may be so terrible. It's a great thing to realize that we are so connected with all of this together. Souls work together. They don't see that one soul's incarnate is really to blame. They accept some responsibility for all the incarnates, while they also expect the incarnates to be individual beings who are co-creative with God. And while they create together, they also create themselves into more and more unique people, and eventually back into being souls. The souls themselves are individuals, but they also have even higher levels of group consciousness and much higher levels of the ability to co-create with their creator than we have while we're physically alive. Because the physics and the metaphysics of this world makes it so difficult to co-create with God in virtue, in light, light in form. Virtue is light in form. And it's very difficult for us to do that. So we get a lot of points, you might say, for even doing some things very wrong at times, just because we're here, if for no other reason. It's so difficult. Now you could say, well, what about the people who give up their souls? What about the people who are just plain evil? They want to be destructive. Well, they're going to live a life of suffering, and they reject grace, not because it isn't available to them. It is. They actually reject it. So evil rejects grace because it gives, by their standards, it gives God power and authority over them, which is an absurdity, but that's what they think. And or they believe that God doesn't exist at all and it's all hoopla. But most of the evil people actually are afraid of God, and they do believe that God exists, but they don't want to admit it to anybody. At any rate, regardless of what they do or don't believe, their rejection of the grace of God and of their soul causes the disconnection between themselves and God in their soul, which causes them to suffer more than all or any other human beings. They are the most sufferable lot that can exist for the total period of time that they exist in. Others might suffer for a very short period of time in the scheme of life, but evil people will suffer for a very, very long time. Not forever. I know some people prefer to believe that, and they may follow a teaching. A number of religions teach us where you will burn in hell forever, eternity, or whatever. That's an exaggeration. Not 100% off, though. There's some truth to it. It's so badly self-created on the part of evil that it really does condemn itself to millions of years, potentially, of suffering. And so, you know, it could turn around. It could say, well, you know, I totally accept my soul, I accept God, and the suffering will stop. It's just that it takes a very long time for most evil people to really make that decision. And the decision has to be carried through with not just a statement like, I now decide that I'm not going to be evil anymore. The only way it can be actually handled correctly in a way that's going to be effective in stopping their suffering is that they have to actually start creating virtue. And that, for evil, is a very, very difficult step. But once they start doing it, it's pretty amazing how it works. It truly is. I am fascinated by the very way that that comes together. Okay, so I hope that gives us some basis, some way to really think about and come to a conclusion about the process of which we are facing in the next year. Of course, it goes on beyond that. But I want to make it really tight today. I want to talk about it in terms of our next year and what we can choose to make a difference in the world. So the first thing is to make your life, all of our lives, more creative. Now, what does creative mean? What does it mean to be creative in comparison to those who are not? Well, creation requires a number of, we'll say, changes in the astral nature of a person. The first is that the person has to give up the predominantly expressive and sometimes oppressive fear of death. And let me explain the reason why that is. Most people who are not co-creative in virtue with God do so because they're too afraid, and the fear comes from the fear of dying. You could say, well, I didn't really, I'm only 20 years old. Why am I afraid of death? Well, it's repressed, you know. But young people repress the fear of death, and they don't deal with it very effectively because of that. So in the repression stage, what happens is the person says, on an intellectual level, everyone's going to die. Oh, yeah. But subconsciously, it just doesn't get through, and the person instead has a fantasy that somehow they're not going to die. Now, the fantasy has no, it's not nothing real about it. It is a fantasy. And oftentimes it involves no real structure of thought. So it isn't like a mental thinking mechanism. It's almost like a wish thing, like, well, I'm going to live forever because I'm not going to die. But that's just nonsense. I mean, those issues are obviously untrue. So that's the first problem, is that people are afraid of death. And their fear of death then leads to all kinds of ancillary fears. The ancillary fears are, well, maybe I won't have enough money. Maybe I won't have enough food. Maybe I won't have enough this and that and everything. And that leads to greed and obsessive materiality. And it gives an excuse for why. Oftentimes people say, well, I can't create this or I can't create that in virtue because it'll cause me to lose too much. I could fail. I could end up losing everything or most. others may harm me, this may harm me, that may harm me. It's this constant, we'll say, avoidance of creation that leads us into a non-creative life. And so fear is like the number one thing. So if we're going to make these changes for the next year, we have to convince ourselves on a very conscious level that death is something that is a process to expanding consciousness and life in another dimension. And the convincing of that comes from both intellectual thought, helps to, in other words, think it through. You might want to read some things. I've written a few books on this. You can, many, many, many articles on it. But you could also look in many other areas. And it is possible for people who absolutely have to have some experience about it, you can have an out-of-body experience. Now, you may not go to the next dimension of time and space. That's very difficult to do. It could take years, literally, to accomplish that. But just to get out of the physical body, you might be able to do it before the end of this year, this next year. So it could be done in a year if you really absolutely had to do it. And that might only be for a few seconds or minutes floating around the room you're in or whatever. But once you're out of the physical body and you're still conscious and you can experience reality, even if it's somewhat stunted by the fact that you're in an etheric or electromagnetic part of the physical world, so you can't interact with it the same way. But still, it gives you the clear sense that life exists outside of the physical body. Once you know life exists out of the physical body and you can sense that directly, almost everybody has a total, like a, oh, wow, kind of experience. And say, yeah, just think about I was afraid of death. It's all nonsense. Then you're more open to maybe understanding how death is a process of moving back to being our souls, and consciousness doesn't die, only bodies do. That's a helpful reality. We don't all have to have out-of-body experiences to get there. Besides the intellectual process, there is something that goes beyond the intellect. And let me explain that. When we focus out and serve others, and when we not only are creative in the process, which is overcoming the fear, but we do it for the purpose of giving to others and helping them to be co-creative with God, and helping them to become more loving and giving at the same time, and we are going to get to that part. When we do all that, our consciousness is so built that we become sometimes instantly aware and conscious of what I'm saying. Not on an intellectual level. It's on a true understanding level, where you finally get it, you go, aha, there is no question. Life exists after physical death. There's no question that I exist. Then the outer body thing may no longer be a necessity, since it does take up a considerable amount of time and efforts for some people to achieve. So, but regardless, it gives you the other option. So you can achieve it through doing sort of a dharmic thing, which is completing some elements of what you've learned and what your service is to. And then suddenly it just becomes reality to you that now, you get it. Where you couldn't understand it before, even though you could intellectually express and reiterate maybe what I say on the radio or what you read someplace, but now it's really part of you. And you don't question it because you know it to be true. It's not, just don't question about it. You know, one way I say if I like the negative side of things sometimes, that what kind of God would exist that would end consciousness after such a miserable stay as the physical world is for such a short period of time? And then if you say, well, what if there's no God? Well, you know, that's part of what the whole procedure is of giving, because God becomes revealed to you everywhere. And you become completely convinced that God exists. And that's the reason why you don't need to even have the experience anymore. So it's really about God and the understanding that God exists. Now, I'm going to really shift gears on you, because remember I said I'm going to throw out some things tonight and just connect them together. in odd ways. I like doing that sometimes. So let me do this with you. Okay, that being the case, I want to go back a couple hundred years ago. How's that for a segue? And talk about the founders of the United States, the first the founders of America. And these people, 56 of them, whatever the total number was, but these people were actually a group of people who had one very major thing in common, and it allowed them to become amazingly creative of some very important things, which I'm going to talk about in a couple of minutes. But they had something so amazingly in common that if you live in the United States or you've read about and know something about the United States, this may start making some sense. They came from varied backgrounds in terms of religions. Some were highly religious. Others were virtually non-religious. But almost all of them, if not all of them, believed very strongly in a God or creator. Now, you could say, how do you know that? Well, you see, they created some really important documents. The Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, which is a brilliant document, and also a whole bunch of papers called the Federalist Papers and interesting letters among themselves that they talked about. And they experimented with various forms of government, not just the only one we have right now, but other things too, to try to come up with answers that would solve age-old problems of how you end up with a government and a country that survives with freedom and love as its foundation, which to them meant exactly what I've expressed in the first part of the show in terms of the first two parts of God's mind, which is spirit. So they were highly spiritual people because they already believed in it. And why did they? Because they had high consciousness. A group of people got together with amazingly high consciousness and saw the opportunity to be of service to the world by creating a country like none other than had ever been created. And they did so by employing within their own existence, their own life, the very things that they wrote about. Now, they weren't perfect, and some of them made terrible errors in terms of their judgment and how they may have lived their life. But still, they were certainly, in terms of the co-creation of a country, put that way ahead and before themselves on any personal level. How do I know that? Because every one of those people who signed the Declaration of Independence and then later the Continental Congress, who made the Articles of Confederation, and then after that the Constitution, they all had great jeopardy at the beginning of the process and until the end of the Revolutionary War, because if we had lost the war, they would have been tortured and killed for sure, and possibly their families as well. So they risked amazing amounts of their future for the benefit of what was an idea at the time, and also a few million people who lived here in this country. But then also they saw it as a worldwide event, because it was a great experiment that the world could then use as a means to hopefully bring about a new way of governing, a new way of living. Now, they also said in these documents that I'm talking about, regularly said, that we come from our Creator, that we are endowed by the Creator with the rights of freedom and love, both, and also the ability to interact, and in those interactions to gain material things, which we call property and money, and we had a right to keep those things and have them to use for ourselves. While we also had the right to charitably share those things with those we thought deserving, provided that we did so in ways that didn't harm other people or in some way enslave them. And it actually gets into anti-slavery in those concepts, even though many people aren't aware of that. So the amazing part of this whole system is that it started with people who came together and were living the life of being a part of the Creator. And if, a few dozen people can create a country, then it doesn't take a huge, huge number of people to get it back on track. It's something to consider in thinking about the next year. Now, they took more than a year. They took really the better part of two decades to achieve this, in some cases more. But nonetheless, we're facing exactly the same issues in the United States right now that those folks were. They had greater sacrifices, and they had a stronger belief in God to face the almost certainty of their suffering and death, and certainly suffering even if they were victorious. Many of them suffered through a very brutal and devastating war. Revolutionary War was not anywhere near fun and games. And in terms of the United States, it was less bloody than the Civil War, but also it was more one-sided. I mean, who would believe that the strongest country on earth goes against the weakest country of its time on earth? And amazingly, the weak prevail. I mean, that was a real challenge. And you have to ask yourself, well, is that because they created so much light? And the answer is, in my opinion, absolutely true, yes. If they were not so enlightened and they didn't enlighten others, there was no chance that they could have achieved such an amazing result. Now, with that thought and encouragement in mind, one of the things I suggest is that everybody probably get something from the creations of these great people from the past, our founders. Read some of the stuff they wrote, including the Constitution, which is worthwhile, and the Declaration of Independence. Also read the Articles of Confederation and see why those articles probably didn't work as well. Because there was too much dissent and not enough agreement among states and even individuals. And there wasn't enough cohesiveness in the government to allow the government to survive the individual selfishness of too many people. You have to find the right balance. And part of it is this thing about being free, the first part of God's mind, with being caring and loving, the second part. Now, caring and loving was missing from the Confederate Articles. And so those didn't work as well. So they threw in a few more loving things, kept most of the freedoms that the Confederate side gave, removed a few of them, small ones, but not the concept that they all got their belief in structure and worthiness from being self-created and co-created by their Creator. Sort of the same thing at the same time. Because God chooses not to force itself, its will onto us. We have free will, and therefore we are self-created because we're free. And that's an amazing thing, because if we follow that system of thought, then it encourages us to continue on to do the same thing in this coming year. It also means we have to give up some of our fears to be more creative, which we'll talk about. Okay, so we're going to be back in about 2 minutes and 30 seconds to discuss more about this idea and a lot of other things, kind of hodgepodge together in tonight's show. So we'll be back in about 2 minutes and 30 seconds from right now.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of.
about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hon, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. McFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
We're back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And tonight we're talking about spiritually helping the world for the next year. I thought it was the appropriate time. Of course, tonight is New Year's Eve. And for those who are listening to the show sometime in the future, at least you have some perspective why this show is what it is. And I hope in that first part that I have given like a foundation of what are going to be some more practical issues and some odd things I'm going to throw out tonight. They may be different, just like I did that last little segment there about our founders. I'm going to throw out a number of things to consider in terms of making changes in ourselves and helping others to do the same. Okay, so let me continue on. Another thing that was very interesting about our founders is they found that their strength came by working together, even though they had amazingly sometimes differences of opinion on various issues. In other words, they didn't all think the same because they were creators and thought, and sometimes they had grand disagreements. But regardless of those disagreements, the thing that held them together was their belief in God and that God was a being, whatever you want to call it that way, that endowed to its creations the right and the privilege of having free will and to follow in thought its creator, if we choose to, and when doing so, can expand our consciousness, can get over almost all our fears, and become a significant changer of the world around us in relatively small numbers. This is what they all believed because they did exactly what I just said based upon my explanation. So that is going to be the crux of what I'm going to suggest tonight, that we don't have to have millions of people all getting together and doing something to make great changes. Each of us has an amazing ability on an individual level, but it is creatively improved if we do it somewhat collectively as somewhat a group, although the group doesn't have to be super large. And even various groups can join together at times to do things as well. So there's a lot to be said about this idea that comes so far from our past that is now put into our present. Now, this, again, is using a model for the United States. I realize a number of our listeners are from other countries. I get your emails. But nonetheless, the United States is a great experiment. And there's so many people in so many countries that want or seek the experiences that we have had, up till the last couple of years at least, available to ourselves. Now, let me suggest a couple of things. First of all, I'm going to give some opinions tonight, which you may not agree about. Some of them are about how the government, the present government, is potentially not acting in the best virtuous way and may be blinded by the dean and seeking of power and control for their own devices. Regardless of whether you believe that or not, even if you think it's wrong, if you do believe and think that the first part of the show was accurate, you can still do everything I'm going to suggest, and it won't change. It won't prevent a good outcome. So you don't have to, quote-unquote, buy into my agenda, if you think I have one, on any political spectrum. Rather, you could just say, well, if I'm being virtuous, then the light will shine. I will become more conscious. And if this guy on the radio is right, I'll figure it out. And if he's wrong, I'll come to that conclusion as well. But in either case, I can't lose anything because I'm going to become more spiritual and co-create my creator more and try to do this with a number of other people, but it doesn't have to be huge numbers. And the more I put effort into this, the better things will become. And it doesn't need to have a connotation to it that has a specific political agenda or outcome to it. You see. I hope you see. All right. So let me continue on now and talk about some of the things that I see are coming this year and how we might look into ways of improving what seem to be not very good results. Okay. First of all, here in the U.S., but it's going to affect largely other countries as well, not in a small one, but big ones. Here in the U.S., our government is attempting to devalue its money. The last time this was attempted in any mass scale was about, give or take, 60 years ago, actually 70, if you go back to the correct timing, during the Roosevelt era, and we went off the gold standard and a lot of issues. But the main factor here is that devaluing money is not a way out of the kind of problems that we're creating for ourselves, which is mostly due to the expansion of government in a huge way. A vulgar way in comparison to what our founders tried to create, but also in a way that leads to those in power gaining huge amounts of more power and control by the expansion of government and the reduction of freedom and the reduction of the ability for all of us here to be who we have thought ourselves to be, the most creative of all the people in the world, because we made it that way by allowing ourselves to be mostly free of government restraint. So this is what we're facing. How is it happening? Well, you all know, most of you know, I think everybody knows, somewhat about universal kinds of health care that are being adopted. What you may not understand is that most of this is really about control of our individual lives and not so much about giving us any kind of health care. We're going to have much worse health care than we had 5 or 10 years ago. We're going to have much worse, if any, health care for some segments of the society, and only slightly improved access to health care among minor segments of the society. But access to health care, if it's bad, and if it doesn't give you the kind of options and freedoms that you're looking for, is detrimental to existence. I'd rather be unhealthy. I'd rather be dead than have people telling me how and when and what I can eat, consume in terms of supplements, kinds of medical practices that I'm allowed to have and when I'm not allowed to have them, and what kinds of things I have to either wait for or not get at all. Those kinds of decisions are so basic to a person's self-structure and to who they are that when you start meddling with that, you are truly meddling with the very nature of God. If God endowed certain things, inalienable or unalienable things to us, those things have got to be now being trampled on by a government that is insistent in many ways of taking over that part of both the economy and of our personalities. We're dealing now with who we are as persons through a government lens. Now, we're souls. Our personality is here only in a minor way. So if we choose, even though the government may force people to do certain things in the next year, including starting to pay for a system that the majority of people don't want to pay for, then we can make changes in ourselves that will offset those changes that are trying to be enforced on us. The first thing is to try to, even if you're forced to pay into the system, not use it. It's a really unusual concept that you'll be paying for something that you refuse to use. I know that sounds like counterintuitive, but it's not crazy. The more people that choose not to opt in, not to be part of the system, not to even, maybe they might break some laws because some of the system says that you have to do certain things. It's crazy. If you're an elderly person, you may have to submit yourself annually to a discussion with your quote-unquote doctor, and if you don't have one will be assigned to you, to discuss what your options are for dying, whether you like it or not. Now, you might say, oh, that's not in the healthcare bill. Well, it's not in the healthcare bill. Actually, that was forced out last June, but a couple days ago, the president signed an order stating that he's putting it back in, and that's what people are going to have to do. I'm generalizing. I'm not going into the specifics, but that to me is outrageous. Now, why is it outrageous? They say it's optional. Well, it's not optional. It's only optional for the people that aren't over age 65. If you're over age 65, you want any health care at all, you have to submit to it. Now, if you don't submit to it, then you won't have health care. Now, you see what I'm trying to tell you. Maybe not having health care is worth it. Because the submission to these kinds of things are terrible. You probably know about this, but schools that receive any federal funding, which is almost every school in the country, almost everyone, now cannot have a whole bunch of variety of foods available to children. And they have to have other varieties of foods. They have to have those. And so now they're saying to us as adults that our children have to eat what some people in Washington have decided is the best thing for them to eat. Also supposedly makes them healthier, and then costs the government less money, you see, to give them health care. Well, you don't have to send your kids to that school, but you're also opting out of the educational system, and in some places that's very difficult to do and also expensive, but maybe it's worthwhile. Maybe the ultimate goal here is a kind of passive resistance. While you actively let people know why you're doing it, you're not going to hide it. You can even put it up on the internet as a group. Say group number ABC is doing this in this town, and we're all getting together, and we're not going to do these things that help feed the government. You can say, well, how is that going to change things? Because the government's going to be very happy, because now you're still having to pay for it through your taxes or whatever else they're going to do to you, but you're not collecting any services. But the odd thing about it, and this is going to surprise you, is that the power and control the government gets is not by taxing it. It's by getting you to do what it wants. If you remove that, in the long run, not in the short run, the government fails. There are a lot of reasons for it, but one of the biggest reasons is that when people vote, they ultimately vote based upon what they're getting or not getting. And if you choose not to get things because it destroys your freedom, you'll vote in ways that will help to change the system in the direction of increasing freedom and love and reducing the kinds of pressures that people are put under, sometimes voting for the wrong things, the wrong choices, because they put themselves in the middle of the system and then they are controlled by the system. So take yourself as far out of the system as possible, and then it's not as serious a problem. Some people say, well, isn't it good we're giving lots of people unemployment income? And some of you listening to me right now are out of work, and you know that unemployment income is necessary for, in some circumstances, for you to be able to do whatever you're doing. That is not necessarily a bad thing for people to have some kind of minimum amounts of income to decide upon. Here is an interesting point, though. It's been discovered that most people find a job within 90 days of this time certain when they know their unemployment is going to run out. And most of the time, the amount of money they make on their job is equal to or greater than the unemployment. Why is that? Why do you think it is? Because people, when they are given enough money to support themselves, they become easy to handle. They become easy to control. They get used to the fact they don't have to work, they don't have to be responsible for their own needs. And so it's only when it's about to be removed that the solution comes in, oh, I think I'll go get a job. It was discovered in a Scandinavian country some a decade or more ago that the more years of unemployment they gave to people, the greater the amount of unemployment became, and the less people were creative in working, meaning that they got jobs that were more mundane, and they didn't do things that were creative in the working arena. So people, they actually got up to 5 years. I don't know if it was Finland or it's one of those countries. They got up to 5 years, and then they discovered that unemployment went down as they kept reducing the number of years of unemployment they gave them until they got down below a year. And then people were automatically going back to work very quickly, and unemployment came way down, and they were more productive and more creative, both on the job and in the jobs that they sought or created for themselves. This is an amazing concept. Amazing. Also, the idea is like a minimum wage. Should there be a minimum wage? Interesting point. But the more you raise the minimum wage, the less people work, and the less people actually, on an average, make money less. Why is that? Because you're not establishing a meritocracy. You're establishing, instead, a government-supported wage system. even though it's just on the low end. Now, the present administration would take that and make it even more so. It's very socialistic. So here the problem becomes that if we're going to opt to make changes, some of us may opt to not take unemployment anymore, may go work maybe for even less money than you're making on unemployment, at least initially. But regardless of the amounts, the point is here that if you're going to truly become more spiritual in yourself, you don't want to be on the gravy train and become one of the sheep, because the situation is going to be devastating. It's going to be awful if more and more people keep doing this. And that's the control. That's what gives power to those who are seeking it. Not because you're taxed, but because you go along with the system. Taxing is another issue. And the best way to change taxing and spending is to vote the folks out that are doing the taxing and the spending. But the best way to change the system in the next year, because we're not going to be able to vote anybody out in the next year unless you have very unusual elections where you're going or where you're at. Somebody occasionally, an area has an off-term election for various reasons. Someone gets sick or they can't continue to be in office, whatever. So, but for the most part, that isn't going to be for 2 years. So if we want to start making changes now, and it's this year that I'm talking about, then it comes from us all taking the initiative. I'm going to come back to this idea with a lot more thought about it in a couple of minutes, but I want to tell you about Phi Chi Jizek. It's here. Yeah, it's really here. And you can get it. You can get it right now. You can get it from, yeah, you can get it from the people who make 5G Jizek. And you can get it by going to, if you want to do it over the internet, I actually can give you the address now, www.buygesic.com. Very simple. World Wide Web, buyjizek.com. That's where you get it from. And you can remember that one. This other thing they gave me last week, I couldn't remember it. I don't know if anybody could have remembered that address. It's kind of goofy. If you want to call, you can call. We'd love to talk to you. Yeah, say hello anyway. And if you want to get some of this Phi Chi Jizek, 602-431-5762. That's 602-431-5762. How does it work, and how well does it work? Well, it works amazingly well. It gets rid of most people's pains and aches and other issues. And it does so on a temporary basis when you take it. And then if you take it consistently, sometimes it even gets rid of the pain on a long-term basis. So you can even significantly reduce the amount you're taking in a fairly short time and get it down to almost nothing. And you still don't have the pain anymore. Wow, really does that. Okay, it does it by changing the way energy, chi energy, it's called the energy of life. It's the first kind of kundalini energy, sometimes referred to as pingala. And that kind of energy is connected very closely to the earth. It flows through hundreds of centers in our nadis system. It's like the nervous system, but it's electromagnetic composed rather than physical nerves. It corresponds to the physical nerves. So. And the energy flows through this system as long as it's flowing through unimpeded in and out of the body, going through the minor centers, there's about 370 or so of those, and the major centers, there's 7 of those. As long as it's doing that, you stay healthy, and you stay well, and you should be pain-free. That's all. It all goes together. Now, if the energy starts moving through the system, and it gets stuck in some of the minor centers, guess what you got? You got pain. Why? Well, because the body doesn't like you? No, because it wants to let you know that the energy is not moving. It's stuck. Now, when it gets stuck, it changes from a life energy to a death energy. but not death like it kills you instantly. It's just that it starts toxifying the cells and all the surrounding living tissue, and this causes bad things. It causes general inflammation. It causes specific inflammation. It causes destruction of communication of nerves. It destroys muscle and bone, and it affects the way organs work. It adversely affects. So all this is going on because the energy isn't flowing right. Now, you can have too much energy. You can have not enough energy. And there's another weird thing. You can have energy that's going against other energy because of phase-related issues. And that causes even worse problems for some people. And when you have all this happening and you take 5-Qi Jizuk, it does some amazing things. It gets the energy to start moving, if it's not. It gets the energy that's moving in phase opposites or phase sometimes odd directions. It causes like forces to be felt. It reduces the forces. And that takes longer. That's why you have to take 5-Qi for days sometimes, because those energies don't just suddenly say, okay, yeah, I think I'll move. Because they, even though they may move more easily, if they're going in different directions, they crash into each other more. And so that doesn't solve the pain problem and doesn't solve the health problem. So the 5-Qi has to kind of massage them. And you can feel this going on inside you. You take the 5-Qi and you can feel the energies realigning and changing from one place to another. It's fascinating. Every time I take it, it's like watching an etheric event going on in my nadir system of changing all of the feelings inside my body. I can feel it going from one place to another and to another. That's amazing. And sometimes you slightly feel a pain that you didn't have. It starts in another part of the body because it's got to balance that too. It's an amazing, amazing herbal supplement. That's all I can say. Truly amazing. And does it work with no side effects? For most people, yes. Nothing. It's just like you take it, and it isn't even like you feel something when you take a lot of Tylenol or whatever, analgesic. Those you can feel something. This you don't necessarily feel anything other than the pain goes away, and you feel more capable and more well. And if you keep using it over days of time, you'll actually resolve enough issues in terms of the way the energies are moving, so you'll have more energy and be able to function better. So this is really important stuff. Now you could say, well, what about all these diseases and stuff? Well, you know, supplements are not supposed to deal with diseases. So I can't tell you that, well, it cures this disease or it doesn't. But we're not really talking about diseases. We're talking about something that's more basic. The disease is an example of the uniqueness of how energies are being misused by the thoughts and actions of individuals. We get our diseases because we are uniquely selfish, and the uniqueness of our selfishness produces a certain syndrome of effects. And so each person has their own kind of disease crop that they get. So when you get 5-Qi Jizuk, you're doing something that's on a different level and works in a different way. Is it cheap? No, it's not cheap, but it's not super expensive either, because in the beginning you use a lot, the first few days, and then you use less, so that on any kind of regular basis, it could be very minimally costly, yet you're getting incredible results you can't get with anything else. So I hope I've convinced you to try this. Now you got a couple of different options. You can get a 30 tablet bottle, and the tablets are real smooth. They go down easy, in my opinion. You can tell me what you think of that. I could take like a handful of them if I wanted to. But at any rate, the 30 count model, the tablets are 1,500 milligrams of active ingredient, which actually has a lot of ingredient in it for the size that they are. And that's $19.95. You can get a 100-count bottle for $49.95. And if you have let's say you had like arthritis or something, it might take a couple 100-count bottles before you get it totally at a point where you say, well, I used to have arthritis. Now I don't know what I got. But I still take this stuff at a very minimal dosage every day, and I don't have nothing. And that would be a very small amount of money to cure what most people consider to be a disease that is incurable. But again, we can't say that the 5Gs have cured them. They cured themselves. That's about the best way to describe it. And you can check this out. Now, if you get headaches or migraines particularly, this is a great, great remedy. Now, there, you're not taking it necessarily every day, although that might be helpful in small amounts. But then, if you have like a migraine, you take a huge amount, maximum. And within a couple hours, the headache is diminished from a migraine to just a moderate headache. And within a day, what headache? gone. Within less than a day. And that's the amazing thing about this, is that it works. That's how it works. Now, does it feel like you're drugged? No. Maybe if you get to the very maximum amount that you should be taking, you might feel a little bit something. And people under the care of physicians could take larger amounts. But that's a different thing now. Then it's being prescribed, and then it's a different issue. And under those circumstances, you could feel some effects because it's such high amounts. But then you'd be dealing with someone who's a professional and knows what they're doing with this and why and how to use it. Okay, so I thought I'd let you know it is available, and I'm done for right now. I took a lot of time saying that, but hey, we've got time tonight. It's New Year's Eve. Time to think about the new things, and I will go into some of this other stuff because I don't think we have enough time for it right now. So let's go back to the question of what is it that we're going to make a difference with in our lives in the next year? Well, one of the areas is that each of us could choose to become more entrepreneurial, to encourage ourselves and other people to work in ways, what we call work anyway, to create a form of income that is more based upon our individual creations than just having a regular job. How does that help things? Well, the more people are entrepreneurial, the more they're expressing freedom in their interactions. I'm not suggesting this to become like rich or to just get more things. I'm suggesting it based upon a totally different idea, and that is living a life of an entrepreneur, even if you have a regular, quote-unquote, everyday job. But now you decide to self-ICGSIC. How's that? Or however, whatever else you decide to do. You decide that this is what you want to do in addition, not necessarily as a replacement, at least initially. That gives you an opportunity to express yourself more and to be free, and probably to get to know other people who are doing the same. So I suggest that if we do this, even if it's done avocationally rather than vocationally to begin with, it is a good thing to help change the world around us, particularly if we do so with a number of other people collectively. Even though we're doing it individually, we can do it maybe with some other people collectively at the same time. And that may give us all kinds of new opportunities. Maybe you'll become a member of the Chamber of Commerce, or maybe you will begin to understand better how our economy is being hurt by the destruction of small businesses and the reduction of the free enterprise system and having free markets. So it's a really, really important thing because you become active in it. Talking about it is good, and you should let other people know about some of these ideas if you agree with them. But doing it is even much better, because even if you disagree with my thoughts about it in terms of political issues, it'd be good for you to do. You see. And the effects will be still beneficial, if not even dramatic. If a large number of people start doing this, when I say large, it doesn't have to be anywhere near the majority. It could be maybe 5% of the population. That's a huge shift, though, in terms of where people are putting their energies and their thoughts. When people are more entrepreneurial, when they believe in the free market system because they're part of it, they have a totally different bent on what it means to be co-creative. Now, that's a simple thing, in my opinion. What about the practice of, we'll say, charity? I totally go along with this idea that charity is really a means of how much you're willing to focus out on others. It's not about really this thing that, well, on this day or that day I'm going to give, you know, or once a month I'm going to pay into some charity or something. It's really about looking for ways to become part of the giving framework of life and to experience the joy of helping others to become more giving. That's, remember, what I had suggested was the means that we were going to test, the litmus test. Are we helping others to become more giving and also not decreasing their creativity at the same time? That's the kind of charity I would like you to consider doing. That type of charity is much more challenging. If you're in a group service group or a national service group or a world service group, you're doing it to the maximum level. But if you're not in any of those kinds of spiritual groups, you can still do it both on your own, and if even better, if you could find some others to share some of the same interests you have, then that would be helpful as a collective to be giving. Don't rely upon giving to quote-unquote known charities. That's not what I'm suggesting. I'm suggesting the exact opposite. Individual creation, individual giving to others to help them become more giving and to not in any way decrease but hopefully increase their own creativity. That's what you're aiming for. And you can't do that by giving to blank, blank charity. It won't work. I'm not suggesting that you stop giving to blank, blank charities if that's really what you prefer or like to do. But in either case, I want you to consider trying this other thing that has a different angle to it. And the results could be profoundly, we'll say, transforming of you into a person who seeks to truly love others in new ways that, as an example, becomes a beacon of light for those that you're giving to. See, it really puts it down to the individual level, even if you're doing it as a group. And that's what's so great about it. That's the kind of charity I would like you to consider today. For the next year, an experiment in charity, a new kind of charity for some people. That's really cool, right? Okay, what else do I suggest? Well, we are a country that is facing a kind of a moral depravity in corruption. And the group that spiritual group that I'm part of, we're having tremendous issues with certain types of corruption that's happening here in the state of Arizona. But wherever you find corruption, you need to do what you can to let others know about it and to collectively work against it. Corruption is really closer, and in many cases is evil. Now, what is corruption? Corruption isn't just that people are stealing from you. It isn't just that they're using power to try to control and sometimes destroy you. Corruption is that they are destroying the fabric of virtue in society. That's what the word means, to corrupt. They're taking something that's good and they're trying to make it into bad. Even though they may have the ulterior, quote-unquote, motives of wanting to have gained power and control and have property and steal it and to get more money and to get more. The end of it is, and the reason it really is evil, that they want to destroy God's thought and form. They want to destroy virtue here in this world that we exist in. And they want to do it because it is the way that they have, in a crazy system, grown to believe that they gain the most, and both in power, control, and in materiality, with having to do the least. They're incredibly selfish people, and oftentimes, most of them, over the half point, are evil. They may not be evil as much as the most evil, because so usually corruption has like a pecking order, and the people at the top are the most evil, and then you go down, and evil sort of works its way to very, very slight levels, but it's still there. And again, corruption is to destroy virtue, to get rid of the spirit in form, God's thought in form, that is the reason we came here. All people with souls came here with that purpose, and corruption is the antithesis of it. Now, how do you find corruption, and what do you do when you do, and what kinds of things can you manage to come up with to make a difference? Because corruption is sometimes highly dangerous and very destructive to people. The best thing is, whenever you find it, be tenacious and get others to work with you to bring it to the light of day. Because the thing that destroys corruption is not equal and opposite force, but rather light. The more it is, the light is shown on it, the less it can survive, and the less its ability to be corruptive. It's the corruption that's the worst part of corruption, not the fact that these people that are doing it are maybe enriching themselves or feeling like they've got something over others or whatever. That's not the worst part. The worst part is that it causes virtue to leave a society. It causes the society itself, the whole structure of society, to become unvirtuous. And that's really, really bad. It's a bad thing. So anytime you experience it, anytime you know about it from others, you can do something. If you want to be of some assistance to us, the people who are behind this program, et cetera, you can. Give us a call or email us. We'll tell you how you can be of help. This is something that is so peculiar right now. And corruption is the worst, unfortunately, in our political system. And in some cases, it's the worst in our elected officials. So you have to be extremely careful because these people wield lots of power and they will come after you because they want to maintain that position of power. And they don't want the light shown on them. The light is the thing they can't stand. They'll do everything they can to hide in the darkness. And that's just part of the system. That's the way it works. But we'll tell you how and give you different ways of serving in those elements if you want to know more. I can't go into any specifics, because this isn't the kind of show, really, we could spend days going over just the ways to deal with corruption and all the different ways its evil head raises itself. What else can we do? Education, big thing. When I talked earlier about students and the food, et cetera, I want you to consider this. The most important thing, you have children or you are concerned about children, everybody usually has some contact with children, be concerned about what's being taught them. Read and understand the concepts that are being used and presented to those fragile and very impressionable young minds. Don't allow your children to be exposed to a system of lies, fallacies, fallacies, half-truths, propaganda, and you name it. If that's what's going on in the schools that are around you, then get active in either changing what is in those schools or helping others to find alternative places to get education from. The best way to change a system that is, we'll say, indoctrinated with falsities, etc., is to remove the people, the children, from the system. Because when there's nobody to teach, they can sit there with all the books that don't make any sense, where they've rewritten history, and their complaints about wanting to get rid of the Constitution or whatever they're teaching these days, and also get rid of God, which is a very interesting point. Well, God is, schools are supposed to be secular, and so we can't talk about God. Where does it say that in the Constitution, by the way? You could talk about God. You could talk about what it means to not have God. You could talk about all kinds of stuff. Open ideas. But if you don't have open ideas, then you got none. And so removing children, and again, this can be costly and time-consuming and difficult. And if you do it this year, if everybody that can does take the opportunity to remove their kids from that kind of environment, that will make a difference. It removes the power. It removes the power. Doesn't mean you won't be taxed for it. They may still take taxes. That depends where you live. And the area that I happen to live in, and other people I know, this area, they have charter schools, and you can go almost anywhere you want. But this is a more free area than some other parts of the country. You may even have to move if you really want to get into freedom. And that's another thing to consider. Where you live is a choice. If you choose to live in a place where people are progressives and against Constitution and the freedoms that we have agreed upon as a country, then the thing to do is move to a place where people do that. You know, as those places lose population, you know what does happen in the next election and after that? As they don't have as many representatives. They don't have as many people to control other people. And they don't get as much money. And a lot of other things take place. It also declines over time the economic system that is trying to be re-regulated. The present administration is attempting to show favoritism to certain progressive democratic states, not just any democratic state, but progressive ones, by pushing government monies into those places so they boost up jobs, because as you know, there's tremendous unemployment. But those places are getting some artificial increases, while other places are not. And the same is happening with house prices, and because obviously if there's more people with jobs, then there's less house failures and house prices stabilize and people are able to stay in their houses. Whereas the states that are more constitutional and want to have more freedoms and maybe either Republican or at least not progressive as much in their viewpoints, those kinds of places are deliberately being targeted to reduce the amount of home ownership, to increase the amount of foreclosures, to increase the amount of unemployment, and to try to force those places to become what the government wants them to be, which is the sheep following them. So this is something to consider. Where you choose to live makes a big difference. And as far as I'm concerned, if I can't live in freedom, then I'm ready to leave. And I'll go to wherever I can be more free. And there's certainly freer states than the places that are the least one, free ones. So you can make choices to do that. And you say, well, but the economy's so bad, and et cetera, et cetera. Well, first thing thing you do is you try your hat at trying to be more entrepreneurial, and then you can use that to go to the other places if necessary. If you can cause a change where you already live, then fine, stay there. Help those to see. But if you can't, then go to the places where it may improve the situation and politically change the system from the inside out. It's a very interesting point. And unfortunately, those that are, you know, against the Constitution, against freedom, and even against love, remember, I'm not saying get rid of love. I'm saying love is something you help others to become more loving at. Those that are doing that are good at this. They've been training themselves for a long time, and I don't think that it's going to be easy to change the present dynamics that have been taking place. So again, you may not agree with my political thoughts, but if you want to be more with people who are going to be closer to being co-creating with their creator, look for those places to live that are like that and move there. That is not a bad idea if you're not in that place now. So it's something to consider. And that may be a bigger choice than whether you make more money or less money or even if you have a job. Although I'm not saying to destitute yourself and put yourself in a situation where you can't afford at all to live. That's unhelpful either. All right. What are the other things that I suggest for this coming year to really make a difference in the world of animals? Well, how about this? How about actively expressing your thoughts and your feelings while we can over the Internet? You notice I say while we can because the government is starting tomorrow to take over the Internet. You may not know that, but that's what they're doing. Shows like this one may not be on the air in another year or two. The reason being, because there's something called net neutrality and a couple other little goodies that the federal FCC, Federal Communications Commission, has decided they now have power to regulate the Internet. They gave it to themselves. So nice. You probably didn't know about this because they just did it in the last week. Now, their decision to do that doesn't sound like much because they're just going to start off very small. But gradually, they will control everything. And if we don't do something now about that, that could be a real problem. How can you change that? Well, the first thing is to let other people know that it's happening, because most people don't know that that's happening. They think, oh, the Internet's all free and everything, and we can do anything we want on it because it's a free place to express ideas, etc. No more. No more. Listen to what the head of the commission said last week. Listen to his words. It will scare you. Tell those words to others. Go to websites to find out what he said, and then make sure others know what he said. And then start writing to your congressman, because Congress has the right to regain control over the FCC and to prevent them from doing what they're doing. Congress can do something about it. Now, you could say, well, the president can veto anything that Congress does. Yeah, maybe. You know, he can veto everything if he wants, but the point is there's only so many vetoes before you veto yourself. Every veto a president makes, he loses some segment of his electorate. So there's an advantage to forcing, so to speak, a president to have to come to terms with his own structure and thought processes, which may be totalitarian in nature and tyrannical and seeking power and control through all these quote-unquote quasi-agencies that he's using in his executive orders. The thing is, and it really is important to realize, that ultimately this is only temporary unless we make it permanent. We're in control. And communication with others, letting everybody know what's going on, is very important. The Internet is a very touchy subject. And most people, when they realize that regulation has already come, and it's just the beginning, but it's going to get really nasty, to the Internet, I think a lot of people, are going to be very concerned about what it means. And freedom of speech is the First Amendment, right, that we have. And that is going away. There won't be much freedom of speech based upon the statements that the FCC and the head of the FCC has made. Just listen to those comments. What else can we do? What else can we do? If we're going to be more spiritual in the coming year, well, here's the thing that I like. I'll put it in the terms of improving our values. Generally speaking, most people have relative values. Now, what does relative values mean? When their values conflict with what is easiest or what is most enjoyable or what is most profitable, they give in to the profit, the ease, et cetera, and change their value. It's relative. I suggest that we start adopting more absolute values. Now, what is an absolute value? An absolute value is that whatever we believe we were endowed with from our Creator, the values is represented in those virtues, that endowment, is everybody's values as a soul, maybe not as a personality, but as a soul. And if we recognize it in others, then we can then promote it in ourselves and begin to act both more honestly, more in unity with God. That's really important, and it hasn't been going so well lately. Earlier I mentioned schools. Schools are putting out a lot of false, nonsense, revisionist histories and other things. But the thing they're doing the worst is in the inculcation of spiritual values, because they're not spiritual. I'm talking about public schools now. A lot of them are saying, well, we don't want God in our school. Well, if you don't have spiritual values, then the values become relativistic. And that leads to darkness. So make sure that the schools that you have some influence in, and especially if your children are going in, have absolute values, spiritual values, as representing part of the educational system. Does that mean they shouldn't or can't mention relative values? I think it's fine. Any day of the week, they want to put relative values up against absolute values and discuss them openly and honestly, that's okay. Because absolute values shine. They shine like the mind of God. You can't miss them. You can't misunderstand them. They're right there. Relative values become dingy, gray, meaningless, even silly, when confronted with the light of God. Absolute values are things that are eternal, just as we are eternal beings. They make us feel and think like we are endless. We are immortal. They are wonderful because that's what they lead us into, is immortality. Relative values increase our sense of mortality and fear, and they cause us to find no meaning or very little meaning in life. They lead to a meaningless existence. And there's lots of ways to prove all this and lots of ways to show it on chalkboards and classrooms. I'm not going to go into that tonight because that's like a couple of shows worth to try to explain how you would teach all that. But the important thing here is that it needs to be part of people's consciousness. It needs to be part of our young people's consciousness. And we as adults need to represent that in our lives, because children learn what they live, not what they're taught. That's a good thing. If you have absolute values as part of your existence, the values of God, and if you live by them, then your children will and their friends will, and it's a wonderful thing. And even if the no good Nick school that happens to be your children's school isn't teaching much in terms of absolute values and pushes relative ones, your kids will reject them. So just say, you know what? Like Alice in Wonderland, you're just a bunch of playing cards, I'm going to push you down. You don't mean anything because you have no effect on me. I'm an immortal being. I am a soul. And this nonsense that you're talking about only destroys people's lives. It makes our whole country terrible. And if you live in any country in this world, having the values of God are the values of virtue now we're talking about, of light and form, is the most freedom-producing thing you can do, even if your country doesn't have much freedom in it. If Hugo Chavez is your president, well, I feel sorry for you. But, you know, you can still live a life of virtue where you are. Well, I'd want to get the heck out of there to tell you the truth. But nonetheless, you can do something about it. You can make a difference. You can make a change. Let's talk about economy. Right now, we're facing the possibility. I know I told you I was going to be jumping around tonight, so we're going to another thing. I'm looking at the time here. Right now, we're facing some serious problems. The president administration is destroying all elements of reasonable energy policy. They have passed by executive order a rule that no offshore drilling can be increased for the next 7 years. Now remember, it only follows from one president's time. So if he gets voted out, that executive order can be immediately revoked by the next president. But still, I want you to understand, and most people don't know that, that has resulted in sudden increases in the price of oil and gasoline. The other thing that's happened is because they're devaluating the money by printing money that has no worth, it's just printed money, that increases inflation and it increases the price artificially of oil that we're buying from overseas. So the price of oil and gas are going up, gasoline, and going up tremendously. Also in our government's policy, they're not opening up any new oil reserve fields, and they're not changing over, as T. Boone Pickens has suggested, to using more natural gas, which we have huge amounts of, because it's a fossil fuel, and they want to make everything from solar energy, which is nonsense, because it costs five times as much as oil. And if you haven't noticed it, your electric bill, the last 6 months, they're going up like crazy, because that's another thing they're doing. Manipulating coal, which is in a very negative way, and restricting the use of coal in electric plants. You didn't know about that. Oh, yeah, they're doing it. And so the price of that's going up. Electricity is tremendous. It's much more affected by coal prices than oil prices. And they're not allowing increased use of natural gas because they want everybody to go solar and wind, which will take decades and will still cost way more than fossil fuels are. So we're headed for a financial crisis that is being created. Why would an administration want to create financial crisis? Because every time there's a crisis, they steal and take on more power and control. And that's what they're really about, is power and control. They're not about what's right for us. How can you make a change to this situation? Well, make your cars, make your houses as efficient as possible. Of course, the government wants you supposedly to do that, but they really don't. They just want you to pay more. Listen to what the president said in his address about a year and a half ago on a Saturday. Listen to what he said about what he expects prices to do on his plan. Energy prices. They'll skyrocket. Why does he want skyrocketing prices? Why would anybody want that? Control. It's about control. It's not about getting people to be energy conscious. But become energy conscious. I'm suggesting that you do. And use less energy, if you can, as best as you can. Make your cars and your houses more efficient. I've gone over this. You can listen to some of the prior shows on this. Why does that work to your advantage? Well, again, since high prices are ways for the government to control what you're doing, you'll have more freedom and be able to control your life more if you have to pay less because you're using less. So it makes some sense to do that. What else can you do? Well, vote the suckers out of here, for heaven's sake. I mean, if that isn't a good enough reason to get rid of an administration and people who want to control you, I don't know what is. I mean, this is down to your virtual survival financially. People will not be able to get loans in a couple of years unless they meet the standards that the government has decided upon in terms of what kind of and ways that the houses are using energy, including computer controls on most of the appliances, et cetera, and having to put solar additionally into houses that is ineffective and inefficient, but just because that's the only way you're going to be able to get the loan. You won't be able to get the amount of energy usage of the house low enough without expending things for stupid reasons. Stupid reasons because they don't pay you economically. It has to do with control. It has to do with a government policy, which is absurd. We don't have to go green overnight. No matter what you believe is happening to the poles, they're melting, they're not melting. I think they are melting. But going overnight to try to change that situation is going to worsen the situation, because eventually we won't have any money to do anything to solve our problems. And the poles are still going to melt, partly because the sun is as much effect on things as anything else. But humans are doing some things to create heat, but we can't solve it by being broke, by being bankrupt. Okay, the other thing I want you to think about is this, that our present policies politically are hurting us as a nation because we're giving up our freedom for the benefit of countries that are tyrannical and that are run by dictators. Now, why would we be doing that? Well, because our country is run by someone who has the same sentiment. Okay, so this is the point. When someone is reducing the effectiveness of survivability from outside countries in taking over our country in both economic terms and maybe geopolitical terms and possibly in military terms, your very existence is a threat. What can you do about that? Well, the first thing is to make sure that if there were some kind of serious military calamity, that you have the ability to survive for 3 to 6 months without any kind of services, anything at all. And if it isn't that, to be also concerned about plagues and other things that could come about. Because as the countries decline in their virtue, people become sicker. There's more outbreaks of military terrible events. And if we're not doing the right things in terms of policies with other countries to prevent them from doing terrible things in the world, whether to us directly or not, we will pay the penalties for these. So try to be, have this year build up some kind of reserve so that you can survive under the worst circumstances. And at the same time, be active about wanting to have a different policy or series of policies based upon what you do or don't believe politically, not because I said certain things. You either believe it or you don't. But even if you don't believe it, and even if you think that everything is hunky-dory, I would still have a system in mind for survivability under the worst of circumstances. Not because you're paranoid or because you think that there's going to be riots in the streets. I don't know what that would be. The point isn't about riots in the streets. The point is that if a nuclear bomb goes up over South Korea, or Iran wipes out Israel and vice versa in nuclear war, we're not going to be able to just, you know, close up our windows and expect that everything's going to be okay. There's going to be fallout, literally. And there's going to be other possible intrusions into our ability to function and to function well enough to be able to control what's going on, especially in electoral issues, etc. If you're not eating and you don't have enough water and shelter, it's going to be pretty hard to get out and vote and to also be politically involved enough to affect what that vote's going to mean to yourself and to others. So bad things could have really bad effects on us internally, politically, talking about in the United States. But for those of you in other countries, this can equally apply to you. And if you live anywhere around the Middle East, I'd be worried. And if you live in South Korea, I think I'd be worried. And if you live in some other places, I might be worried. I don't know if any place is safe. But you can't get rid of this by just arbitrarily deciding to yourself unilaterally to get rid of most of your nuclear weapons. That doesn't solve any problems. What you have to solve is the aggression and evil in countries. And that's not a nuclear issue. That's an issue about understanding right from wrong and knowing who's good and who's not. These are the things to consider, and you want to bring yourself to a new state of enlightenment, hopefully, about these, by doing all the other things we talked about in the show tonight and a lot more that I didn't have time to get into. So I want you to think about that. The coming year is going to be stressful. The year following may be worse. I don't want to give you grandiose ideas that everything's going to be perfect, and I don't want to think that what you think that there's nothing we can do about it. A balance is what we need. Well, we're running out of time for right now. So I hope this has made some sense. I could have talked a lot more about this. And I want you to think whether you agree about any of the political ideas I said, because I interspersed that with all the other things. Changing these things in yourself spiritually could make all the difference to what the next year is going to mean for you. And it's the meaning in life that really counts, not whether things are rough or not rough, not whether things turn out to be what you want them to be. How meaningful was your life overall? That's the real issue. For those of you who have read Life's Hidden Meaning, you know what I'm talking about. Well, until next week and next year, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.